Hello and welcome to Beat Cafe, a weekly program sponsored by Offbeat Magazine that explores the music scene in New Orleans and the broader reach of Louisiana. I'm David Johnson, contributing editor at Offbeat and host of this program. Offbeat is a proud supporter of WHIV 102.3 FM. I invite you to visit offbeat.com to read our November digital edition, featuring a cover story about Little Freddie King, this year's winner of the Lifetime Achievement Award at the Best of the Beat Music Awards ceremony. And congratulations to all the winners at the ceremony that took place just this last week. Check out our additional feature content, album reviews, original videos, and live music listings at offbeat.com. At WHIV, we're expanding our music format to infuse more Latin, hip-hop, blues, and jazz into regular programming. Tune in to Inspirational Brew, featuring gospel and inspirational music on Sundays at 6 a.m., or NOLA Nation, which features Louisiana-produced hip-hop on Fridays and Saturdays at 10 p.m. On today's episode, I will be joined by Lou Hill, a founding member of the electrifying soul-funk group Waterseed. The band is releasing a new EP combined with a comic book, all part of a project titled Sounds of the Wasteland. And that will be happening tonight, November 18th at the Rabbit Hole, located at 1228 Aretha Castle Haley Boulevard. In the second half hour of the program, I'll repeat an interview with multi-instrumentalist Mahmoud Chouki that first aired earlier this year on August 12th. Born and raised in Morocco, Mahmoud is a master guitarist and composer who currently lives and works here in New Orleans. His art draws together music from several different international contexts to explore how music speaks across cultural divides. And welcome to Beat Cafe. I'm David Johnson. I'm thrilled today to be joined by Lou Hill of the band Waterseed, where he serves as band leader, songwriter, and drummer. The band is debuting a new project, a comic book, combined with an EP tonight on November 18th, titled Sounds of the Wasteland at the Rabbit Hole. So welcome to the show, Lou. Happy to have you here.
Hey, thank you for having me. I'm excited about this.
So Lou, a comic book, that's not always something you hear coming out of a band. So let's just start there. I'm curious to know how this project got started and what can comic book fans expect when they get their hands on this?
So we have always been very much so in the comic book, sci-fi, fantasy, all of that stuff with technology. And, you know, music is a passion of ours, but also, you know, we just, you know, being musicians, we have these vivid imaginations about everything. I think the idea to really create a comic book came from a concept that one of the band members had many years ago. We were doing a extended residency in Russia. And, you know, when the band members goes, hey, Gentleman Sharp actually said, I have this idea where we're like the future funk stars. And we're like this superhero team. And we do this and say, hey, man, we should write a comic book about it. And so since then, we've kind of always said we should be comic book writers. So it's been a big part from the moment that we started putting Future Funk Star onto Waterseed, the Future Funk Stars, you know, onto our name. That's what it's been. And a lot of people get that confused because they're like, are you going to be funk stars in the future? It's like, no, we are. Literally, that's the name of the team, Future Funk Stars. So yeah. It's the way it works.
So this comic book, as I understand it, kind of has an apocalyptic theme. Maybe you could just give us a little brief synopsis of what the storyline is for this.
Yeah, so Sounds of the Wasteland. Sounds of the Wasteland is actually the second book that we've ever written, or the second, you know, themed book that we've written. It is Sounds of the Wasteland. It's basically a story about, is a post-apocalyptic planet Earth. And it follows our protagonist, Callie, who's a singer-songwriter, like through a journey of finding why in the world is she on planet Earth after this spiritual, whatever apocalypse has happened. So in this process, she's the only people left on planet Earth are angels, demons, and musicians. That's it. And so she's traveling through this wasteland. And of course there's sound there because musicians are there, but she's traveling through this wasteland with her guitar, Jericho, who actually talks to her, but she doesn't know if other people can hear it. She doesn't know she's crazy or if it's really the guitar is really talking to her. So it's an interesting story.
So who did the illustrations for the comic book?
A gentleman by the name of, well, I won't give his full name, but or his real name, but he goes by Design Sunset, and he's actually from the Dominican Republic. He's a young 20-something year old guy who did all the illustration. And usually with comic books, there's someone who does the drawing, and then there's another person that does inking, which is like the tracing of the drawing, and then there's another person that does the coloring. He did all of it. So he did the drawing, the inking, and the coloring, and he's amazing.
And how did you come into contact with him as a band?
So I'm into, again, all of these Facebook social media groups that have all of these young Black African-American writers and comic book fans and creators and illustrators. And I literally said, hey, look, I want to do this. I want to do this book. And I put it in every group, and tons of people responded like, I'm really interested. And he sent me his work, and it was the best work that I saw. And I was just like, hey, man, we have to work together. And we've been working ever since.
So did you write the story, or was this a collaborative project among the band?
So I actually wrote this story. So yeah, I wrote this one. And this is about, it's going to be anywhere from 6 to 12 books in this series and that follows this story. But I'm enjoying every bit of it.
And what kind of led to this premise of the angels, demons, and musicians? And I've got to say, if we have to rebuild civilization, I'd be happy to have musicians do it. So especially.
Well, that's tricky. There's going to be some left and right turns. This is going to be really interesting. And don't be surprised if you see some local musicians and personalities pop up in this book as we move forward through it. But there was a time when the band would go out to the West Coast at least 2 or 3 times a year, pre-COVID, of course. And, you know, we didn't have money to fly. So, or to have everybody fly and actually tour the West Coast. So one or two people would volunteer and say, we're going to drive the gear from New Orleans to the West Coast, and we'll put everybody else on planes. It makes sense because we can't travel with all the instruments and all the gears and the luggage. We have to pay more. During one of those trips, I was driving through the western part of Texas, which if you've ever taken that drive, it's a wasteland. It's just desert. It's nothing out there. You're pulling up like, wow, places like this in America really do exist. And I was thinking about the rest of the band who would be flying out the next day, because it was a 2-day drive roughly. Like, you guys are flying out the next day. We're going to literally pick you up at the airport before we even go to a hotel. It was like, there's no way singers or like guitar players could survive like the end of the world. They would just, they're just personalities don't do it. It would be like bass players and drummers and sound techs and stuff like that. Because you know, we're real handsy people. So it's like, that was the concept.
Very cool. Well, let's come back and maybe just give a broader overview of Waterseed, especially maybe for listeners who aren't familiar with the band. How would you describe the group, and tell me who's involved in this band?
I would describe the group as being, we try to be very cutting edge. The name of the band is Waterseed. It means knowledge and growth. Water represents knowledge. Seed represents growth. So we're always pushing forward. People say the sound is reminiscent of something from the past, and that's true. But it's also, we're consistently pushing the envelope forward. Like, what are those new sounds, new feelings? I would consider the band to be, I would have to use 3 genres, I guess. I would have to use funk, pop. Well, geez, I would have to use like maybe 4, like funk, pop, soul, rock, you know, which at one point in time in music was considered funk, you know, all of those things kind of existed inside of funk. Nowadays is a little weird.
That's a good summation, because I've heard you play and all of those genres really do fit you, and even beyond, like you said, the future funk stars. So let's talk individually about you. How did you get your start as a musician? What was your earliest exposure to music?
I mean, I grew up right in the St. Bernard corridor down the street from Circle Food Store on North Villery. And in that neighborhood. So, you know, definitely a lot of just slightly outside of the Treme, but all of your Mardi Gras Indians, brass bands, all of that stuff was every day. You know, it was an everyday experience. So I like to tell this story and say that music was such a part of my life that I did not realize how much great music I was exposed to until I became a musician and was like, wow, this is what I've been listening to my whole life. And understanding what these musicians were doing, I was kind of taking them for granted as a youth, you know. But as I grew up, it expanded. And it started very simple. A few of my friends, seventh grade, like, hey, man, let's start a band. We say, I'm going to play this, I'm going to play that, I'm going to play this. And we put together a band. And so around the age of 12, I started kind of taking it seriously and learning to play drums and doing that kind of thing. I think I had my first gig at like 13 or something like that. Went on to study all through my high school years, got a talent scholarship to Xavier University and was able to study with a lot of great musicians and perform with a lot of great musicians, everything from brass bands to jazz bands to rock to you name it, just play with a lot of legends. You know, kind of went through the normal tradition that New Orleans musicians go through, which is like the hard knocks of music. You know, some people are going to kick you out. Some people are going to say, hey, take another shot, but you stick in there.
Now, would you say Waterseed in any way is inspired by the music scene, or do you feel like you've kind of created something wholly new here?
So for me, we always get, you guys don't sound like you're from New Orleans. We get that all the time. Every single time, you guys don't sound like you're from New Orleans. It breaks my heart as a New Orleanian to hear that, but I compare it to like knowing some of the guys like from the Meters and some of the guys from the Nevilles is like, for me, I'm like, those guys listen to what we do and they say, I hear you taking what we did and just putting a modern spin on it. It's like, how can you as a creative listen to something that was created, you know, 60s, 70s, and then have rap, rock, soul, hip hop, all of this stuff happen, and then you don't apply any of the stuff in between to your filter of creativity? It's kind of, and I'm not knocking anybody that sounds super Meter-esque, but there's still so much music that you've digested. Your root is your root, you know, and our root is the, you know, brass band, is the church, is jazz, is, so you hear those things in our music, but we've also digested a lot more. And so it comes out through a filter that if you really know New Orleans music, you hear us being musically New Orleans. So I understand when people say we don't sound like we come from New Orleans or we're something completely new. I do hope that we are something new, you know, with a whole lot of respect and homage to the musicians that were before us. I would hope that, you know, they say Miles Davis was like, he didn't want to hear cats playing bebop anymore. He's like, man, I did that. Why don't, you're supposed to do what I did and make it better. And so hopefully people understand that that's our mission. It's like, we're going to take what you guys gave us and we're going to not, I would humble myself to say, not make it better, but put it into its own spin, you know, and respect it in that way. So that's my long answer for that when it comes up.
Well, and that's true. I mean, music does not stay in an amber. It's an evolving thing. And you certainly have, like I said, formed your own very distinctive sound. So I'm curious to know specifically how your bandmates, how you all came to become Waterseed. How did that form?
The band was initially created on the campus of Xavier University here in New Orleans. We started as a writing team, just production. I'd had a band my first few years of college. I didn't want to do that anymore. It's like, it's crazy. It's too much to deal with. And so I said, hey, some friends said, hey, let's start a band. I said, nope, I'll start a writing team. And so we started a writing team and it was called Waterseed. We dealt with a few songs that a few people picked up and performed or whatever. And it was just horrible. We'd go to their shows. It was just horrible. Like, man, you're not even halfway performing this song right. So we, from that point on, we said, we'll do it ourselves. And that's what happened. So along the way, members have changed or whatever. My two partners would be Sinise Love and Gentleman Sharp. Sinise is actually from Pasadena, California. Gentleman Sharp is from right here in New Orleans. And then the other guys, the other two members, Raheem Glaspie and Ten Spencer. Raheem Glaspie is known around town as a singer and an actor. He won, I think, the Gambit Award a couple years back. So he's an actor as well. And 10 is actually from, she moved in from Oakland. And then, you know, we just have, we're supported by a group of really amazing musicians that have also signed on to come and fill in on all the rest of the instruments.
All right, we're going to take a brief break, a pause for the cause here at WHIV, and I'll be back to talk more with Lou Hill of Waterseed.
The vibe of the city for human rights and social justice. WHIV 102.3 FM.
And welcome back to Beat Cafe. I'm David Johnson, host of the program. I am joined today by Lou Hill of the band Waterseed, where he serves as the band leader, songwriter, and drummer. They're debuting a new project, a comic book, combined with an AP, on November 18th, and that is titled Sounds of the Wasteland, and you can check it all out at The Rabbit Hole. So Lou, we talked a little earlier in the program about this comic book and the illustrator. You wrote the narrative. I'm curious, when you hand this over to an illustrator, do you just kind of say, have at it, take your interpretation, or do you, or have you tried to like mold perhaps part of the look? How does that relationship work?
So look, this is my first time getting to the illustration level. What I did was I wrote the whole thing. Like I wrote line by line, you know, blow by blow, script, everything. I then handed it off to him. And let me be, I have to do this because I teach a class on protecting your IP. I had it copywritten already. So I went through the copywriting, sent it to the Library of Congress before I let anybody, like really, I was comfortable sending it to anybody. So I sent it to him and I said, hey, look, man, just draw one page. Tell me what you think about the one page. I'll pay you like $25, just one page, you know. And he drew the page and it made, I loved it. And so I knew he was the guy. He and I then set off on a 3 to 4 month relationship of literally painstakingly going through the story. And he was very, I love this particular illustrator because a lot of times we would go back and forth like, hey, I am thinking of this this way. I think I need more, another page to illustrate this. We would do that. You know, we would like mess with this, with the dialogue and say, it's too long, it's too short, it's this, it's that. And he would send me a penciled rendering of it and like, placements of how I thought it should feel. And before he really got down deep into it, you know, and I would be like, yep, that makes sense for this particular dialogue. And once we kind of got each page lined up with that, then we would go through the process, the next level, which would be finalizing just the penciling of the page, as I was talking about earlier, where this is definitively what the page is going to look like. And then the next phase was going through each page and doing all the coloring. Once everything was done, now we're going to go back and go through painstakingly through every page and make sure the coloring is proper.
So I assume you've been a big fan of comics or illustrated novels for a good while?
For a very long time, my whole life.
You're a songwriter, of course.
So I am.
Another very creative outlet. Well, how would you describe your songwriting process? Is that something that kind of comes like a lightning strike to you, something that takes shape over time, or what's your process?
It's a hard question. I don't have one process. I wish I did, then I would know that I could just do it all the time. And I'll just go through a few. The first process that keeps me up at night is that for some whatever reason, early in the morning when I'm waking up, I get tons of song ideas. So I have like 3,000, 4,000 things in my voice, iPhone situation where I'm recording ideas half sleep and kind of like, this is the idea. This is, oh, I was working on this song. This would be a dope hook. And it comes to me kind of in the dream state. So a lot of that happens. But then also when I was younger and I knew that I wanted to be a songwriter, I really just disciplined myself to sit every night and work on like, I'm going to write some lyrics today. I'm going to write hook verse. And I just did that every night for a long time to kind of develop that and think about how I wanted to tell stories and create whatever I was trying to express, how to get that in like a melody in a song form and format. And then the last part is, you know, going to school, understanding that discipline to like work and use the technical side of it, which is more theory based. Hey, is this progression to get this sound? Hey, this is the orchestration you use if you want this emotion. This is what you use if you don't. This is stylistically it. So I guess I can use all three form and fashion. It just depends on what I'm getting called for. If I'm getting called to do a song for a commercial, I'm probably going to use like a Quick Theory thing. This is what's traditional. Hey, what am I trying to sell? This melody works. It fits this genre. Yep, that makes sense. This is easy. Versus if I'm like sitting down writing a song for Waterseed, which is going to be very much so like involved and risky and trying to prove a point and all of these things, is going to be way more intense, even more intense if I'm writing a song for a singer that's like, hey, Lou, can you write a song for me? I'm going to talk to them a lot about what they're feeling and then go from there. So I guess I use all three of those processes to kind of get, you know, music.
So during the pandemic, of course, we can't say we're out of the pandemic. It's still with us, but not nearly as severe as it had been. But you were very involved in charitable work among the in the music community. One was the Band Together Benefit, and another was a project you had called Embrace the Culture. Revisit that a little bit with me. What was your involvement?
So the Band Together Benefit was something that, this was before the pandemic just went crazy. We heard about it. We knew it was coming. We were like, you know, it's happened so quickly. It was like a day or two in. I got with my team. It's like, man, we need to do something really special. If it's going to go like this, we've got to do something really special. I called up both of my other two business partners and was like, hey, look, would you be interested in taking this ride with me and putting together like this telethon for musicians? And we were able to, within the first 6 weeks of COVID, just when everything was destitute and we were just didn't know how long this would last and everything, we were able to put together, bring in PJ Morton and Tank and the Bangers and, you know, brass bands and everybody, John Cleary and everybody. We were able to get clearance from the cities, record them, put this on social media, and we raised a ton of money. We gave out $500, I guess, awards to musicians, little grants to musicians individually, not for their whole band. So like, apply, you're going to get it. And that's what happened. So it was really something really cool to do. And it was a one-off for us. We, you know, that music is in a vault somewhere. Out of respect to the musicians, we, you know, we understand it's their IP, is their content, honestly, not ours. So we've never released it, even though people have been begging, why don't you put it? It's like, dude, we got to respect the musician. So unfortunately, you can't even really see the benefit anymore. Maybe when we're in a different situation, we can pay to license all of it, but we don't want to disrespect art. And then that turned into the city reached out to us, the Embrace the Culture department in New Orleans reached out to us and said, hey, can you produce something that would benefit musicians, but also give locals a taste of what they're missing in New Orleans? And so we put together what's called Go Live NOLA, which is actually supported by Embrace the Culture. I definitely cannot take credit for Embrace the Culture. That's Elena Harris that runs that department. But the program that they supported was called Go Live NOLA. That aired every week from the House of Blues. Musicians would come in and play. We would give them a stipend to perform that, and it received a lot of love, and it grew into us being able to move into Hispanola, because we had a few Hispanic people come on board like, hey, we need this for our culture. We feel left behind. And so we started producing that once a week, and that was streamed live from the Now Jazz Museum. So that was something really amazing that we did. And I have to say this, as we're in the endemic, we were going to continue this, and we've moved into something called Go Live Tonight, which is going to be basically Austin City Limits meets like The Late Show. So we've been in production on that, and it's been, it's the hardest thing of my life I've ever done. But the idea is the same thing. The mission of how do we get New Orleans musicians, new, old, whatever, legacy musicians, to literally be at the forefront of all music in the world. And this TV show is going to be the vehicle for that.
Wow, what a great thing. I can't wait to see that. Of course, everybody can find out more by visiting waterseedmusic.com, where you can learn more about the comic book, the EP. I understand you have an NFT as well.
Yep.
As we close out, we're going to listen to one of the songs that you wrote that is from this EP. It's called Face in the Crowd. So give me a little description. Yes, Face in the Crowd, a little description of this.
This was a song written by myself, and I have to give a big shout out to Raheem Glaspie, put most of it together. I just helped out, and producer PK. This is a song, it's super high energy. It's something great. When you hear it, you're going to love it. You're going to sing it immediately. It's an amazing song. And can I just talk about our event on November 18th real quick?
Yes, absolutely. It's tonight.
Well, we're releasing the graphic novel on that day, but it's so much going on. At the Rabbit Hole, we have Stan Autry from the Black Panthers going to be there. We have Terrence Rosemore from Guardians of the Galaxy. He's going to be there. We have Angelique Roche, who works directly with Marvel. She's going to be there interviewing everybody. We have an Xbox gaming competition. We partnered with Nolivate Black. It's going to be a full, they're bringing in virtual reality. It's going to be an amazing time. Please come out and support us tonight.
Wow, that sounds amazing. I'll be there, I can guarantee.
Yeah.
So, Face in the Crowd.
Yep.
And we'll give it a listen now. And thank you for joining me today, Lou. And we look forward to all the future new comic books and all the great expressive content from Waterseed. Thank you.
Thank you so much, David.
Welcome to Beat Cafe. I'm David Johnson, host of the program, editor from Offbeat Magazine here on WHIV 102.3 FM. And I am thrilled today to be joined by Mahmood Chuki. He is a guitar player and a multi-instrumentalist specializing in string instruments from North Africa and the Middle East. He's been here in New Orleans since 2017 and is playing with just about every musician you can imagine. And we're going to hear one of his recordings later in this episode. But welcome, Mahmood. Happy to have you here.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
So Mahmood, like I said, I mentioned you are from Morocco and you've taken quite a world journey actually before you arrived here in New Orleans. Tell me about your very earliest musical influences and how you came to become a musician.
Yeah, actually I started with playing guitar, classical guitar in the music conservatory. That was my first influence, but also growing up in Morocco and especially in north of Morocco, former Spanish colony. So growing up listening to a lot of Spanish music, so I was a lot of influenced by Spanish guitar, especially by Paco de Lucía, great guitarist. Also in Morocco, also since we are like kind of a crossroad between Africa and Europe, East and West, so also listening all these artists from Lebanon, Egyptian, like Egyptian and Lebanon is a big music industry in the Arabic world. So and also like Moroccan traditional music was very rich, and listening also to TV and American and British, like the Beatles, the Rolling Stones, the Metallica, Santana.
Every imaginable influence.
So yeah, we grew up with those influences. But that's musically, I was classically trained. So then I was interested to learn more instruments, like especially when I start traveling around Morocco to discover the music of my country. And so that's where I discovered lutar, genbri, hejvouj, and also like percussions.
So obviously your pursuit of music took you beyond Morocco. Where were you first traveling and kind of absorbing sounds of other cultures and other nations?
Well, actually, that was in Emirates. I was 14. I was selected with four Moroccan kids to represent Morocco in kind of an Arab event, so the youth of Arab. So so I met kids from Algeria, Tunisia, Emirates, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Lebanon. So all around, and that was like one of my first time I hear some other style of music, other cultures. And like, we like remembering one day we're wearing traditional clothes. So it was beautiful to see that like, even we are like in the Arab world, but we are very different. We don't speak the same dialect. So our music, so that's make me to like more listening to Middle Eastern music.
Yeah, the very, very large swath, yes, of the world, obviously. Yeah. And that obviously kind of whetted your appetite to journey other places, pick up other music. From there, where was your
So yeah, your that was Spain, actually. I was in Turkey, like Spain, because like I was invited there with the Moroccan guitar ensemble. I was part of it to tour, to play music, to have some workshop with like kind of famous guitarists, but also Turkey. I loved Turkish music, very, very rich in melodies. And that's like, I learned a lot also from techniques also, like they are like, and I try, everything I try, and also I start learning oud, baglama Turkish. And so my project at the beginning, it was like to take this, learn this instrument and try to do the same on guitar. So that like, for example, sometime on my solo guitar, you can hear like a oud technique or like a baglama technique. And so this was very, very interesting to learn just music, melodies, and like how to play. Then I get like the appetite of the travels. And it's not only music also, it's like learning about other cultures and other people. Like that's why actually I love New Orleans. It's not only because of the music, like it's because of the city, of like how people welcome you, how you feel like comfortable. That's what like, I love like travel was a big part of my life journey.
Yes. Well, of course, when you are a musician, you're able to really kind of integrate yourself into a culture because music is a universal language.
Yeah.
As they say, now we've talked in the past, and one person you mentioned to me in a project that I found really fascinating was Hugh de Courson and the Magic Lutes project. Yeah. Tell me more about that.
Yeah, Hugues de Courson, he kind of is very interesting composer from France. Like, he's famous of his project of fusion between traditional music and symphony. For example, he have this project named Vivaldi, like Vivaldi the Irish. So he bring some symphony playing a Vivaldi piece, but like that fusion, like he composed something that's mixed into Vivaldi music with an Irish, with the dancer, with like percussionist, with the flute. And then he did also Back to Africa, like with back music. And the one who's kind of the most famous, like a lot of awards with, it's the Egyptian Mozart. And that was like a beautiful project. And from that project, he composed a piece named Magic Lute. The Magic Lute, it's kind of a story of the oud instrument from the traditional like way was built until the sophisticated one. So for example, in Morocco, we have this instrument named lutar. I play this one, like I learned to play it in Morocco in the Atlas. That was actually the first form of oud with like just a piece of woody hull without and stretch goat skin. And then, so that's how I was me playing this instrument. Then we had an Egyptian oud player, baglama from Turkey, a tar from Azerbaijan, and sarod from India. So like that's the story of this instrument, like from different technique and different sound. We did this project in Qatar. It was 2011. Yeah, 2011. Yeah, but also it was with the Symphonic Orchestra of Doha, and we were like the soloist with the old instrument, the lute. But also we had like some of amazing musicians like Theodosis Pasov, a Bulgarian kaval player, and Mr. Li Ahmed on the percussion, and like and more like musicians. So that became after, like we built a great, great friendship. But yeah, we spent 2 weeks in Doha rehearsing this this project, and it was an amazing.
I love the whole concept of this, of combining these ethnic music traditions with these, you know, classical masters. Obviously, you mentioned Bach, Mozart, Vivaldi, and these, I think a lot of these can be found on YouTube.
If
people are interested.
Yeah, on YouTube and like on all this platform. And so, yeah, that's, you know, I play a lot of those projects, like creating fusion between music and cultures. And they are not everybody like that. I know that people like love this project, like Mozart Egyptian and thing, but like this other one's like, no, you are.
You're tampering with something so sacred.
Exactly. So yeah.
There's room for everyone as well.
Exactly.
You're not gonna be able to not just hear Vivaldi, but the fact that you can combine these new, innovative, creative projects.
Something I'm happy to, I knew that's very, very young. As a musician, you can't please everyone.
That's an early lesson to learn.
That's a very early. So you just do, you know, like what you like, music you want, and maybe you do mistakes, but you will learn. But just never like base your creation or your projects about how to please people or not. But those projects are very special. My favorite is the Vivaldi, the Irish. But Magic Lute also, it was like entirely composed by Hugues, and yeah, which was like, it was kind of dream, like to play with the symphony orchestra. It's like, wow, it was kind of amazing sensation. So, and we did it again in Bahrain. We played it another time, but this time we played it with a Turkish orchestra. So yeah, and until now we're still like great, great friend with Hugues, and also with all musicians. That's after I invite to play for my project, Orient Occident Switzerland.
Right, we'll talk about that next. You've been doing a residency in, usually in the fall, in Switzerland, at Chateau Mercier. Tell me about this. This is a true world music collaboration
that
you've described. What exactly is this?
So actually, it's, the idea is to bring musicians from like different culture, and mostly the Mediterranean parts, because the Orient and Europe, it's the Middle East. I know, like, that was confusing sometimes when I say Orient here. For American, it's like China, Asia, and Asia, yeah. Yeah. So the Orient for, like, it's like more Middle East Persian. So the project is kind of East-West, Midwest. How musician from different, like, different music background, play different kind of instruments, don't speak the same language. How those people, we can put them together in a space and we survive, not just play music.
like kind of like survivor musicians, is that it? So you bring musicians from all these different cultures, exactly. Like you said, and your goal is to create a composition or a concert.
Yeah, it's actually a concert. So like it starts very small. So now it's been like, it will be the 11th edition this year. So it's been like kind of, yeah, 11 years I'm doing that. It's one of the beautiful projects. For example, I give you just an example. Like I bring a flutist from Spain with a violinist from Amsterdam, from Holland, and the pianist, she's Turkish, Iranian, Swiss, the cello player, she's Algerian, and the drummer from Thailand.
And like I said, you don't even know each other's language.
Nobody know each other. So I'm the only one who knows. So we arrive in a castle. And it's already arrived. It's a very, very beautiful space. And we met, and the idea is every musician bring the music from his culture or his own composition, whatever. So imagine, like, I have like a Bulgarian accordionist bringing a piece from Bulgarian traditional one, and play with an oud player from Egypt, or a percussionist and a percussionist from Turkey, and a saxophonist from India, meeting a trumpetist from New Orleans, Steve Land. Playing a Bulgarian song.
Incredible. It's so, like a United Nations jam session.
Exactly. So like, yeah, it's also, we are not also jamming or like, it's very, we spend a week to organize, like we write the arrangement. So it's kind of an arrangement we do together. So like, yeah, they play the team. We have a lot of improvisation. We have like, it's when I select this musician, it's not like, of course, they are all like amazing master musicians, but also like, you should have musicians that you can live with. They can also accept the idea. Not all the musicians, you can tell them like you're being in Switzerland, like within a castle, with a chef, and like you have like it's very well paid, everything. But nobody accept, because like it's, you have to accept that you will lose your comfort. You will not, sure, be in your comfort, right, zone. Because if you are like a classical musician or jazz musician, like I want to play only this. So you have to be ready to be like kind of a beginner.
Right. Everybody has to be very flexible, adaptable.
Yeah. And also
your ears have to be wide open.
Yeah. And also like you have to come with the idea of like you're learning. Like that's, mm-hmm, so that's like doing that for all those years. I learned a lot.
I bet.
On rhythm. So like example, like you're playing like all those Eastern European music and like very complicated rhythm, like on 11 or 13 or 7, and like all these melodies pass through your head. But also meeting all these musicians, like because you spend like 10 days together, we learn from each other. Sometimes like I remember like I have a Russian clarinetist with a bass player from Ivory Coast, and like seeing them how to try to speak. So it's amazing how like not just being a musician, but like learning from each other,
sure,
as human. And one of the things I learned, and like I do now, if you want to have like a good residency, like musically, you have to put, so you have to start the rehearsal with a break. It's not only about music. Like music, we know all to play music, but like play music together, we need to trust each other. You know, to know each other.
Building those bonds.
Exactly.
Yes.
So, like, yeah, I remember one day, like one of the musicians were playing his composition. He was like so angry. No, we don't play it like that. We should not. Like, he was like overwhelmed because like he's hearing his music with a oud, with like a from Egypt, and like he's like used to the music from another. And then it was like overwhelmed. He said like, okay, let's do it another time. Okay, let's play something else. And then a few days later, like, you know, you became friends. We're like, yes, also like, drinks together. We spend like the go to the evenings to spend time, and then like, guys, play it wherever you want to play.
It's amazing to hear this. It's like that's the kind of harmony not only you need in music, but just in global relations.
Yeah,
you know, that only the world could operate more like that. And now that we've been hearing so much about this incredible collaboration of these musicians from all over the globe, who, like Mahmoud said, gather every year at Chateau Mercier, we're going to listen to one of their recordings. And I'll be back with Mahmoud Chouki.
We've got you covered, New Orleans, WHIV-FM, and streaming 24/7 at WHIVFM.org, WHIVLP 102.3 FM, New Orleans.
And we're back with Beat Cafe. I'm David Johnson. I'm joined today by Mahmoud Chouki, a guitar player from Morocco, lives now in New Orleans. He's also a multi-instrumentalist with a specialty in string instruments from North Africa and the Middle East. And we were talking earlier about fusion, the combination of so many musicians gathering in one place. Well, that in some ways defines your arrival here in New Orleans.
Yes.
You said fusion, but also
Confusion.
So tell me about your arrival in New Orleans and what your time here in the city has meant to you.
Well, actually, I visited first time in 2015 as a tourist. Did a road trip from north until Austin, like visiting musical cities. One of them was Nashville, Memphis, New Orleans. I was supposed to stay 4 days in the stay 2 weeks, started looking for place. And like, actually my stay in New Orleans, I was lucky actually to one of the first person I meet, it was Brian Seeger. I was my first day arrived to New Orleans and I went to Freshman Street to Maison. He was playing with Oscar
Rossignoli.
Yes. And that's first time like I was, what amazing music. And like I was playing his, I remember one of his song named Buffalo Trace. So when he finished his set, like I bought a CD from him and like was just like talk a little bit and he gets my business card. I have one. And he sent me an email to tell me like he checked my music and he liked it and he wants to invite me to meet his students at UNO. And
talk about a great introduction. You obviously made a very good impression.
And and then like he invites me for dinner. So meeting Cindy Scott and then starting hangout around. So they meet Brad Walker. And so that was like my introduction to New Orleans. And 2 years later, when deciding to move here. So yeah, I was invited by UNO officially to play with the student combo there. I play my first gig at Snag Harbor. So actually, that was like my introduction to New Orleans. I think that's why I say like I'm kind of arrived by the big door.
You met the right people at the right time, but you also had the talent to impress everybody.
And from that, like, what was amazing at the beginning, I was kind of confused at the beginning because I was impressed about the talent here, about the quality of the talent. And also, like, I was feeling like I have to play, be a jazz musician too. And I try to be a jazz musician. And like, in a moment, I feel like I just be yourself. And that's how everything's changed in my life in New Orleans, just playing my composition, my own music, my own style, and like how people in New Orleans like welcoming and like supporting. And from that, like I'm so grateful to like everyone who's like supporting me that's the last 5 years. And I was so happy like to see like a lot of the faces I know in my concert, like in Jazz Fest this year. And that's what I'm really, really, I am grateful for New Orleans, for like the people, how welcome me as a musician and also as myself.
Right. Well, you've added kind of a new flavor to this incredible gumbo. It's used too much here, but you know, you do bring the Middle Eastern sound, and it has been so welcoming. And as you say, though, your music has also been influenced and changed by the people you've met.
Yeah, my music also changed a lot in New Orleans. I remember like first year I arrived here, and like 1 year later, I went for a tour with like the project in Orient Occident in Europe. And as soon as I started playing, more musicians started looking at me, saying, man, you changed a lot the way playing. Playing in New Orleans like gave me more confidence as a musician playing and like, improvising in New Orleans. It's like there's a lot of freedom in playing music. You feel that like you don't feel like you have rules. Like when I was learning, like playing in Europe a lot, so you have to put yourself in a box. So like here, I feel like I just explore.
You've had the full freedom.
And like I play, and also playing with musician here, like from day one, they're like, they say like, yeah, we love to play your music and we love to learn it. And they add a lot of things to it. So like, I'm also like grateful to every musician who play with me in a while.
So tell me about your most recent projects. What's underway right now? I know you're going to be doing a recording. We're taping this at the New Orleans Jazz Museum, which has a new label called Gallatin Street. What are you going to be doing in that project?
I'm still cooking it, but what I want to do actually, it's since it's with the Jazz Museum and they had this beautiful project with Detroit Brook playing like jazz, like New Orleans tunes with my instruments.
Wow. So bringing the Moroccan.
Exactly. Bringing like just myself, like as some, it would be like kind of a story of like a Moroccan who arrived to New Orleans and learn like New Orleans music and play it like in my way, but also in collaboration. So, and also those musicians also playing my compositions in like their way. So kind of
two-way street there. Yes, that sounds fantastic. Two-way street on Gallatin Street Records. Now, you had a recent project that maybe it's still underway, Safar.
Well, Safar is it's a name of a tune I'm composing that I play a lot. It's one of my favorites. It's been like years I never recorded. So that's kind of a project I want next. Recording so far, and like it would be more collaboration with mother.
And Safar means?
Safar, it's mean journey.
Journey.
Or travel.
Well, that's certainly what you have been on. So that definitely applies all of the music that you've been recording. So where can people hear you nowadays? Where are you performing in the near future?
Well, actually, I just took some break to starting like working on the music, and but yeah, I will be at the Laurel Street,
the Porch Concert,
Laurel Street, on June 11th.
June, right?
And I'm going with Margie Perez on a concert in North Carolina. So I have some
summer plans.
I'm working also on the tour in July in East Coast.
We're going to close out the show by listening to another recording that includes Mahmood, and this is titled North Path. It's a Greek song, and it's from Orient Occident, which was a radio concert he was part of in Paris in 2017. So before we hear this, tell us a little bit of background about this.
So this tunes, it was brought by Eleftheria, who's Daoulse, who's a kanun player from Greece. And we did an arrangement together. Aurore Voalke, she's from Paris, and she's violin player. Bisirli Ahmed on percussions. Samuel Pon, he's Swiss and Finn from Finland. He played double bass. And Stéphane Chapuis, accordion and bandoneon from Switzerland. And myself on guitar. And this song was like I said, it's kind of Greek, but by the end, it's a mixture between all of our influences. And I hope you like it.
What an amazing assortment of musicians and the very type of work you've been doing and doing so remarkably, teaming up with people from all over the world. So we're so happy to have you here in New Orleans, Mahmood.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
I was very happy to have you here on the show today. Thank you. And we will be out there seeing more of you, of course, in the months to come. And this is David Johnson with Beat Cafe. And here we go, listening to Orient Occident.
WHIV 102.3 FM.